How's it hanging, Grace?
It's hanging. High? Low? I don't know. Which one's good?
But that's a good question. I think it depends on the mood. I don't know. Let's just go. Yeah, we'll go with low. Grace.
It's hanging low.
Grace, did you know that you produce 40,000 liters of saliva in your lifetime, which equates to 500 bathtubs full of saliva?
Okay. What if I did know that?
That's a lot of saliva. I don't think you knew that.
I didn't. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Think about that the next time you are salivating. Okay?
Okay. Got it.
Grace, this is our show, so we should probably start it. You want?
Yeah, let's start it. Yeah.
All right, Grace. Grace, I'm on vacation this week and don't have to work, which is great. Let's talk about it all on episode 68.
I'm Eric Idiot Renner Kosek.
And I'm Grace Hot Pants Langheim. Eric is all business in the front of the pack, and I am all about the party in the back.
That's right. Business up front and party in the back. Together, we are the Running Mullet.
And we are going to talk about every aspect of running, the podium to the DNF and everything in between.
If you are a runner, this show is for you. Now sit back, get out your foam roller, and enjoy the party.
Here we are.
Yep.
How was the weekend?
Oh, the weekend was great. I had Callie visit me from... Yeah, she came down to visit me, even though she lives far away. She was like, no, you don't live far enough away for me not to visit you, unlike some people I know. And I took her to the Kelly's Run Trail. Or the Kelly's Run Loop, which is on the Conestoga Trail. It was a lot of fun. And then we went to the Tricky Hill Experience. We went to ice cream. And then we got dinner. And then we went to Chicky's Rock. And it was fun.
Nice.
Sounds How was your weekend?
My weekend was... Oh, man. My weekend was full of driving. So Thursday afternoon, we drove down to Philly with my full-size pickup truck into the heart of Philly and stayed the night in a hotel. And so we had a parking garage that night, and then we had to move because Lauren's track meet was like 3 miles away. So we had to drive to a different parking garage. Long story short, I hope to never have to drive into Philly again in my entire life. And our guest on the show will probably vouch for that and understand that because he lives down there. But I did good, I think, but it's nuts. So holy mackerel, it's crazy. Yeah. So yeah. So Thursday, drove 4 hours down there. Lauren ran Friday. She did good. It was super hot. She was happy with how she ran. And then we headed up to Maine on Saturday Friday and Saturday. And here, I'm in Maine now.
All right. And you're there all
freaking week. Yeah.
All freaking week.
That's all freaking week. And it's amazing because this week where you're at, there's a stupid heat wave going on. And up here is like, today was actually cold. Like I'm in a sweatshirt. It's like 65 out.
Yeah. And
I mean, it gets a little warmer throughout the week, but nothing like the 90s that you guys are getting.
Yeah.
So,
Good
time. I'm in my happy place, if you will, you know, like I mean, don't get me wrong. Next Monday's show, I'm going to be a miserable pouty pout face.
Okay. I mean, no surprise there.
Yeah, you need. I know that's normal, but this is gonna—it's gonna be a little more drastic.
Okay.
Just let me be, get over myself, and we can move on.
Yeah, we'll let you have a moment. Yeah, that's okay.
But let's focus on the now. I mean, it's Monday night. I'm happy. I don't work this week, and that's great.
Yeah, it is, and we have a great guest.
We do. So he's amazing. So Bob Stewart, we've had him on before. We've talked about FKTs before.
Yeah.
We've had Jordan on to talk about the PA section of the Appalachian Trail and how gnarly it is. And we've talked about that probably two or three times on the show. But the bottom line is what we're going to talk about tonight is an effort that you know, needs to be talked about, whether we talked about the trail or how far it is or people's times, because Mr. Stewart, which I'm going to add to the show right now, just set the fastest time on the section through Pennsylvania, unsupported, which, I mean, let's throw the numbers out there. We're talking 230 miles, 31,000 feet of gain. Both of those are ish and ish. And this dude carried everything he had on his back and set the fastest time, beating the previous time by a mere 50-ish minutes, which over 4 days came down to 50 freaking minutes. Bob, first of all, congratulations and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're quickly becoming, at least in my eyes, you're becoming known for this, having this ability to do this super long stuff, fully prepared and doing it unsupported. And, you know, you thrive in that kind of situation. That's your jam, right?
Yeah. So I sort of originally came from a backpacking background. So that's where my skills were really developed. My wife got me into backpacking 15 years ago. And so from there, she sort of dabbled in it and I just ran away with it and became obsessed and was like, I just love the idea that you put a pack on your back and you walk into the woods and you're self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And the unsupported style is like that, like.
It's as raw as you can get, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so it all started with my whole goal. I'm going to mention this in the last one, but my whole goal was to hike all, I think there's 18 Pennsylvania state forest trails. There's 20 if you count the Standing Stone Trail and Laurel Highlands. And I work full time, so I can't take off, you know, weeks and weeks to hike these trails. So I just started hiking them really fast. And I realized that it is not just fun to hike them in general, but it's really fun to hike them fast, like a totally different experience. So
I think we probably have quite a few questions for you, but the one that pops into my head real quick was, did you use that same homemade pack of yours that you stitched together, or did you use a different one this time?
I used the same pack. And that's if you look at my gear, every piece of my gear is like modified and re-sewed. And I have like little tweaks to everything. Just because when you're doing something like this, it just like little like creature comforts, like having my InReach in a certain spot. So I don't even have to like fiddle with it. I just like push a button to send a message, and like spots for the charger. So I don't have to take the pack off, and I readjust. I basically like disassemble the pack, after the Tuscarora FKT. Redid the shoulders and then attached the shoulder straps back on. So it's sort of the same pack. It's a lot different, but I did use that one. Yep.
So I guess we'll start out, unless Grace, you have any questions right off the bat, just take us through the whole ordeal from the beginning to the end. I mean, let's face it. You beat the record by 50 minutes, which is huge, but it's not that huge. So if you know what I'm saying, it is, but you beat it, but did it go as planned from the beginning? I mean, go ahead and start from the beginning. Where did it go good? Where did it go bad? What stood out as good stuff to tell us about?
Well, so the most ridiculous thing was that it's kind of comical that in my, like, so I can take 100,000 steps over 5 days and, you know, I don't fall. It's very deliberate. And, you know, there's a lot of hazards that I encounter when I'm out on the trail. But in my everyday life, I'm quite clumsy and like I bang into things and hit my elbow and fall off my bike. And the night before I was on the FKT, I was at my wife's aunt and uncle house. They live up in the Poconos. And I was giving my girls a bath. And I'm just like, I don't even know what I was doing in the bathroom. And I like lost balance, kicked my foot out, and I smashed the side of my foot into a baseboard radiator.
Oh, no.
And cut a like quarter inch by quarter inch sort of triangular gash in my foot.
Oh, no.
And
just perfect.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And so I like, it took a while to stop bleeding. I didn't say anything to anybody. And then I just sort of showed it to my wife and she's like, are you kidding me? And so I asked my wife's aunt for a Band-Aid. And then the night before whenever I start an unsupported FKT, I always like Leuco tape up my feet in the spots right. that I know I need it. So I just put like a little tiny Band-Aid on it and then Leuco taped on top of it and hope for the best. And it definitely was really uncomfortable on the rocks the first 2 days. And every step I noticed it wasn't agonizing, but when you're taking 150,000 steps in a day,
yeah,
you tend to notice stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it honestly, it's just one of those, it's part of the story. All of these FKTs are a story and it's got like a beginning, middle, and end. It was just part of the beginning. And by day three, it pretty much miraculously healed itself. The human body is pretty incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was a little concerned because on day three, I took off the like Band-Aid and Leuco tape just to make sure it wasn't red and infected. And it was pale white, looked okay, was pussy. But I was like, all right, we're just going to put, I had a like a pad in my first aid kit, put the pad on, like a nonstick gauze pad, put that on, put Leuco tape on. And I'm like, I'm not looking at it again for the rest of this. It's just, I'll survive. But so day one went pretty much as planned. So my plan was I ran at Eastern States last summer and I'd never gone through the night before into the next day. I've always napped. And so through Eastern States, I felt pretty good. I do pretty well with sleep deprivation. And so I went through the night into the next day during Eastern States and just hung out during the day. And my brain was normal. And I decided that I wanted to try that on the first night of the FKT just to like go all out and then try to sleep, go through the next day and then sleep around sunset. And then, so I got to about Allentown Shelter, which is 50 something miles, and got water. And then I started to get concerned that I was going to not be able to, basically I was going to slow down during the day after the first night. And so I decided that I was going to take a nap, like a, I don't know, 40 minute nap. And of course I lie through my bivy on the ground, got into my bivy, lie down. The second I lie down, it was like 5 a.m. A couple, maybe a half hour before sunrise. And the birds just start chirping, which is the absolute worst.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not going to be good. So I just sort of lied there for a bit. I probably slept for 40 minutes the first night and woke up and
So that first day, did you have certain markers along the way that you were like, I want to hit this point by this time and this point by this time? Or do you just have a goal for day one?
So I really just have a goal for day one. I don't break it down by sections, and I have like Eagle, Beagle, Seagull, and it's Eagle, Beagle, Seagull sort of for like the overall FKT. I wouldn't be able to handle mentally dealing with like different goals, different days, trying to like keep that in track.
Yeah.
Basically I was just trying to get to where I got to around, so I made it to mile 57, I think, by 5 a.m. And at that time I was about 3 hours ahead of the FKT, and I stayed 3 hours ahead of it up until after Swatara Gap. You go through like St. Anthony's Wilderness, which is beautiful. That was like one of my favorite sections, and then up to Peter's Mountain. And up in that section I really slowed down and I lost a lot of time. It was really slow going and I wasn't going fast, and it's super rocky up there. So
I know that section all too well. Okay. All right. That's helpful. Keep on rolling. So then day two happens, day three,
day four. So day two, I'll go back to day two. It's so crazy on these things how your brain will just like there. I don't know if it's like chemicals or like what happens, but day one, I was like, I'm so privileged to be out here. Like the weather was perfect. It was like 70 degrees, sunny, low humidity, feeling so great, made it 58 miles, felt awesome, woke up the next day. And usually if I get like an hour of sleep, I am totally fine. It like resets my brain. Uh-huh. And I woke up and I just like was not feeling it. I made it to Dan's Pulpit. I'm sort of going in reverse.
Yeah.
Like schedule here, but got to Dan's Pulpit up to the Pinnacle. And I was really looking forward to that because my wife and I actually got engaged at the Pinnacle.
Aww.
And I thought it would be cool to like, you know, bring back the memories and have that experience. But as I was going up, there was like a dad and his like 8-year-old kid backpacking up the trail. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, I just got kind of emotional and like, it's crazy that I've only been out in the woods for 24 hours, but I like miss my daughters. I miss my wife. I like miss my family home. And it feels like you've been away for a lifetime, but yeah. And so it just like sort of hit me and I was like, what's the point? Like, why am I out here? What am I trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
But then of course I'm just like, just keep doing it. Just keep going. So I got past the Pinnacle, got past Port Clinton, which is really pretty rough because that climb out of Port Clinton's tough and the rocks are just like relentless all the way through. And so made it through that section and then I got...
Now, wait, I'm sorry. I have to interrupt you along the way. So I want to back up to this down point that you had.
Yeah.
Because I think, especially with multi-day events, this is pretty normal because I have talked to like 3 different people who went through the same exact thing. I just went through the same thing at the Horseshoe Trail. But how do you convince yourself or how do you make sure that you're still doing the things that you're supposed to do? Like, how do you keep eating, hydrating, doing all the things and not fall into the trap of self-sabotaging while you're in that bad spot? Because I think that's the danger.
So eating for me is easy. I'm pretty methodical with how I consume calories. So for me, it's every 12 miles, I have like 150 gram bag of maltodextrin. That's like 600-ish calories. So that's every 12 miles, I consume that, which varies depending on if I water, because I need water to consume that. Mm-hmm. And then eating in between, basically every 6 miles in between, I have like a bag of chips or like M&Ms or like normal food, which is like 50% of my calories. So in between, I consume that. So I'm making sure that it's like every 6 miles, I'm consuming the calories that I need. I know a lot of people go like every hour, but I'm okay if I do every like 2 hours or so.
Okay.
Mentally, I just know that you just have to remind yourself that it will pass. Like all of a sudden, like whatever crazy like serotonin or like whatever endorphins come in when you start running will like switch that trigger in your brain. And all of a sudden you'll be like, I'm happy to be out here again.
Mm.
So I just have to remember to force myself to keep going.
Yeah.
And you'll get past that. When I was on the Benton McKay Trail, I felt that too. It was a little different because I was like in a foreign state. So I felt super homesick for my Pennsylvania trails.
Right.
So it was a totally different feeling than this was like a little different. I just missed like my family and my girls when I like, it just brought the situation that I was in, brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah. And I think it's easier to get through that moment when you have people with you. When you're unsupported, you're just in your thoughts and in your feels, and there's nobody to really talk you out of it except for yourself. You know?
There's nothing to distract you. You're just like, you have to distract yourself to be like, all right, I'm going to think about. And that's sort of what allows me to do this, is I can distract myself pretty well. And then all of a sudden miles will be gone and I'll be like, you know, 15 miles from where I am. And I'm like, you know, all right, we made it to mile 30. We're halfway through the day. Let's like keep going and set like little. So for me, it's like little mile markers. I'm like, all right, let's get to Port Clinton and then get up that hill. And then I remember that there's like water up there and I have memories from like a trail run that I did up there.
Mm-hmm.
That night though was blurry. Because I had only slept like 40 minutes the night before. So I don't remember a whole lot. Yeah, and I camped right before the Route 501 shelter, which is like this, it's like an old converted pottery barn, which I was like really wanted to stay there, but I was rolling in at like midnight and I didn't want to bother the people that I was going, like mm-hmm. that were staying there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was day two. Day three, got about, I think, 3 hours sleep, woke up, felt real good, took off, and then, I think I made pretty good time that day. I'm trying to think of where that was going into Swatara Gap. And so that was a pretty cruisy ridgeline. I was able to make pretty good time. And then when you come into Swatara Gap, it's like really cruisy. And I was able to make up a lot of speed going through there into St. Anthony's Wilderness. And those trails are also not very rocky. So I was able to make good time just up until you get to, Peter's Mountain. Mm-hmm. We're back at Peter's Mountain. That I was hoping I could make really good time on that ridge, but it's for some reason like every single trail in the world ends up on the ridge and it's always super rocky.
Yeah.
And then I was hoping that the descent into Duncannon would be smooth, but it was just like, you know, rock scrambling and you're like crawling like hand over hand. And that was in the dark.
I did that section in January and that was not fun.
Yeah.
In 12 inches of snow.
I can imagine. And also it's like the relentless length of it. I think it's 13 miles on the ridge and then three to get up, three to get down.
Yes.
So you're just up there for a long time and there's no water. So
no, it took me forever to get through. I'm like, this should not be taking this long. Yeah. It's a brutal ridgeline. You would think a ridgeline would be easier, but it's really a relentless ridge. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you get down into Duncannon. Did you stop at the Doyle?
What's the Doyle?
The Doyle Hotel.
Oh, is that on like the corner there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little hostel. They've got good food.
It looks
fun. You can't because you're unsupported.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
So that was wild coming into Duncannon. First of all, I have like a fear of heights. So I hate going over these bridges, especially with like big rigs coming flying at me.
That's a big one, yeah.
Yeah. So I made it over the bridge and then, but it was crazy. Once I got into Duncannon, I was really tired at that point and I was just ready to get like up onto the ridge. Cause I knew there was a campsite by, I think it's like Eagle something Vista, just like Hawk Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I got into Duncannon, I don't know if it's like olfactory hallucinations or what was going on, but it smelled like I was in a different country. It was really wild. I've been to like Vietnam and Cambodia and like those places smell totally different than like walking through Duncannon, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And it smelled like, I was so confused. I was like having weird deja vu, but I was like, I've never been here before. And this smells so strange. It was just so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I like those experiences. It was enjoyable.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So you go up, you did start up Hawk Rock that day.
Yep. Yeah. So I made it up to the top of Hawk Rock. Some poor guy was camped at the campsite at Hawk Rock and I'm like delirious and I've got my headlamp on and it's like shining right into this poor guy's tent. And because I'm like trying to like process what I need to do. And I'm like, I can't camp here. I don't know where I'm going to go. And he's like, what are you doing? Why are you standing there? And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I was like, I'm just hiking. And he was like, are you hiking the AT? And I'm like, yeah, I am. I think I'm sort of hiking it. I was like, can I camp here? And he's like, sure, man, whatever. Like, just stop shining your light at me. So I like paced around for a little bit, but he had a campfire and it was like still sort of smoldering and I couldn't camp like downwind of the campfire. And there was nowhere else to sit on my bivy. And I was like, so I just wandered around for like 5 minutes and then ended up walking like a mile down the trail and just put my bivy in the woods.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. That's not a bad area.
No. Yeah. And I was psyched because I have to thank Jordan. I owe him because I chatted with him a lot, asking him for info and like water sources, just like his knowledge of the trail, because he's got a super extensive knowledge. So thank you, Jordan. But he was like, once you get to Cove Mountain and you come around that backside, the rocks sort of ease up. So they you get a breather after that.
Yeah. So that would have been day three or day four. You get your breather.
That was, I think, three.
Yeah.
Basically that was my final push. Like once I woke up that day. And another crazy thing that I've never had happen before is, when I woke up that morning, I was like sweating profusely through my sleeping bag and like through my, like, I have like a Alpha Direct fleece. Everything was soaking wet. And I thought I had like a fever. I didn't know what was going on, but I was like, I don't have time to deal with this. So if anybody knows what that is, I don't know if it's like a body temperature thing or
Now, like, how much sleep did you get that night?
2 hours.
Okay. So this is day three. And you're going on 2 hours of and 40 minutes of sleep so far?
No. So I did 40 minutes, then I did 3 hours, then 2 hours.
Okay. And 5 hours and 40 minutes.
Yep.
So waking up for day four, you had to realize like where you were at and what needed to be done to to get the record, right?
So at that point, I knew I was like either I lost my 3 hour lead and I was like either at the record or behind, because I knew where Cal, who had the previous record, slept every night and what time he started based on his Strava tracks. And so I was like doing, it's funny, there was a podcast with Jeff Garmeyer where he's like, I never do as much math in my head as I do when I'm on an FKT. Just doing like division, multiplication, then like dividing by like threes to figure out different stuff. And I'm like, all right.
And it's one of the things that you do to keep your brain occupied.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
just doing, like, I hate doing trail math, but also what else are you going to do while you're out there? So you may as well just do trail math to figure out at what point am I going to get to that cool rock formation.
And I could easily just take out my phone and use the calculator, but I'd like rather try to struggle. And it's also a good barometer of like how wacky I am with sleep deprivation. I'll like lose track of like, you know, 120 divided by 30. I'll like lose track of it. And then I'm like, all right, I'm pretty bad right now.
Okay. So you start day three, you know what you have to do to get done.
Yep.
And now you're going to, there's still plenty of rocks in Rocksylvania at that point, but you're starting to let up some.
Yeah. So I knew that from the point where Cal slept, which was just north of wherever the Tuscarora Trail runs into the AT on that mountain. He averaged 23-minute miles from, it was like 72 miles. He averaged 23-minute miles. And so basically I was like, I can beat that. I can do that. And so I essentially ran as much as I could through the Cumberland Valley because it's super flat, no rocks, going through like fields. And I made up a lot of time going through the Cumberland Valley,
nice,
which was great. Got back out of the valley into Michaux, which I'm pretty familiar with. I've run a lot of the trails in there. And so that was great. Just cruising through Michaux, little rockier than I expected. Some like rock features that you're like crawling in around and up and over, which slowed me a bit. I wasn't psyched about that, but is what it is. And then I decided going up to Pole Steeple, it's a pretty good climb. My brain just did like something crazy, like where again, like the like endorphins kicked in and I felt so good and so like euphoric. And I was like, this is uncomfortable how good I feel, because I feel like at some point I'm going to crash. And it's concerning, like so early in the night, because it was about 6 p.m. And I don't want to feel that good before like the darkest hours of the night. So I just like was like, whatever, I'm just going to roll with it.
Ride that as long as you can. And then deal with it later.
cruise down into Pine Grove Furnace, which is, it's a pretty flat section. Good. There's like a rail trail in there. Ran into Pine Grove, ran out of Pine Grove. And then once I got to Birch Run Shelter, which is, it was, I don't know, midnight at that point, I decided, I kept doing the math, trying to figure out how much, if I could sleep. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to be faster if I sleep than if I don't sleep at all. I'm just going to be sort of like plodding along, trying to like, you know, struggle through these miles. So I threw my bivvy down, didn't even blow up my air pad, threw my, didn't even like, I just lied on top of the bivvy, pulled my sleeping bag over and then set my watch for 25 minutes. So I slept for 25 minutes, alarm went off, got up and then just got back on the trail and took off.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
So yeah, I just slept basically in the dirt, which was awesome.
Dirt naps are the best.
Yeah.
So tell us about the finish. You come in and there's thousands of people cheering you on. No, you get toward the end.
Yep.
Tell so us about it.
Basically, I get to towards the end. There's a woman like a mile from the end and she was like, "Hey, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm doing fantastic." She's like, "Oh, great." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm about to finish my section hike." She's like, "Have a good day." And then I just kind of went on. I always think it's funny that, like, you know, I don't know. I just like to keep it between, like, keep it with myself. But
yeah.
So I got to the finish, ran right past, because I couldn't remember if there was like a sign or if there was like some designation, mm-hmm. which gives me like a little bit of anxiety because I'm like, when do I stop? And if I run too far, especially cutting it so close.
Yeah. And then,
but yeah, I saw the sign for the Mason-Dixon trail, the Mason-Dixon line. Mm-hmm. Stop my watch. And then in perfect, like, poetic fashion, I went to take a picture of the sign. And then I, like, leaned over. And then my pole got caught between my legs. I tripped, threw my phone in the air, landed on the rocks. My pole strap ripped out of my pole, which, like, broke. And then I just, like, sort of stumbled over the rocks. And I was like, all right, I'm done.
Great.
I was just like, this is the perfect way to end.
That is absolutely perfect. And did you know that, did you have enough, you know, mental strength to know that you got the unsupported FKT at that point? Okay.
So I ran a lot of the last 10 miles or so.
Okay.
Because my goal was to get, again, some arbitrary like time difference. I wanted to get less than 4 days, 2 hours. I wanted 4 days, 1 hour.
Yeah.
And so, again, what's the point?
Sure. But,
no, it just looks better and sounds better.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
So I was running as much as I could those last like 10 miles. Wow. And of course, I got some crazy in like weird injury in my left calf.
Yeah.
In the last 10 miles where I was convinced that something was torn or something was ripped in my calf muscle. And it was like agonizing every time I ran, it was just super painful, but I was like, whatever, it's just pain. It'll go away.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I stopped and sat on a rock, I like took me about half an hour to make it up to the, there's a park called Penmar Park. Mm-hmm. I like just hobbled up to Penmar Park and like sat on a bench up there. I was like, if I had more than 10 miles ago, I don't know if I would have been able to finish. Cause it was pretty agonizing.
Oh my gosh. And you did it. And this is, you know, just for the folks listening, if you don't know, this is a competitive section of the AT. So completing the entire Appalachian Trail is very competitive, and all of the states are also really competitive. So there's usually several attempts every year to beat the previous times. And if you set an FKT unsupported that's fast, the supported and the self-supported have to be faster than the unsupported. So the unsupported not only is the most difficult, but it kind of sets the bar for the other two, which I think is interesting. Now, can you tell us, so first we had a question that came through. I have lots more. What are your thoughts on a northbound effort?
So I know that Heather Anderson went northbound. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's possible. I would much prefer. So after I did the Tuscarora Trail, mm-hmm. I ended the Tuscarora with like the Relentless Pennsylvania Rocks. Mm-hmm. And I immediately regretted that decision. If I were to do it again, I would go south. My thought process was on the rocks, I'll be more agile with a lighter pack, but mm-hmm. they're just like off camber, twisting your angles. And the rocks aren't anything that I haven't experienced before. They're just your typical rocks. It's just sure. the length of time that you're navigating these for 100 miles or so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the elevation gain is no different going north or south. It's pretty much the same. It's just, do you want to end with rocks or do you want to end a little bit easier? Because Michaud is pretty cruisy. Like you can run a good section of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm of the, you know, everybody's different with their preference. I like to do the hard stuff first and then cruise later.
Yeah.
That's always my preference. And you had some probably a good feeling coming into this. Was this your first attempt at an unsupported for the Pennsylvania AT?
It was, yep.
Okay. But you did the Tuscarora, which for anybody who doesn't know, I believe the Tuscarora is, that's a Blue Blaze for the AT, right?
It is. It was intended to be an alternate if the corridor for the AT was sort of overtaken by like residential neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. developed it sort of to bypass in case. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of glad that never happened because that trail is really tough. I can't imagine like a quote unquote normal thru hiker going through that because there's like multiple 18 mile water carries.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I saw that one. That's the one you did previous to this. And I just want to do a side note about the Chuck Keeper Trail. Is it Chuck Keeper? Kuiper? Keeper?
Kuiper like Viper.
Kuiper. Okay. So the Chuck Kuiper Trail, I saw that in your FKT list and I know somebody who just attempted it and they just said it was not easy to navigate at all and fairly overgrown. Has that been your experience? What was the Chuck Kuiper like?
So I did that in early May uh-huh. and I mean, the blowdowns are crazy. There was, I think there's a emerald ash borer, which is an invasive insect that is okay. killing a lot of the ash trees. And so they're just falling in huge sections across the trail.
Hmm.
So those were those sections were tough to navigate, but the trail itself is, I mean, I had a GPX track on my watch, so okay. getting lost is pretty impossible.
All right. I'm going to send her your way. That's what's going to happen.
It's not an easy trail. Yeah.
That's yeah. what I heard.
For the record, the Mirage Board did kill all the ash trees in PA. And now mm-hmm. the problem is they're all standing dead. Yeah. So it's they're constant and they're at the point where they're dried out and they're brittle. So they're constantly falling right now. So it's kind of like we're in this zone, this next couple, the previous year or two and the next couple years. There's nothing to do other than let them fall. So I'm sure as far as trails go, it's going to be quite that we always get trees to fall during storms, but this is a totally different animal because there's so many of them in some spots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what's really great is Sproul State Forest just recently hired a recreational forester. And they've been doing a ton of work in the forest. And I know that they're focusing right now on improving the Chuck Kuiper Trail. So they're blazing, doing a lot of trail work. Okay. So that's really great to see.
Okay.
So, yeah, hopefully it'll be in better condition soon.
Yeah, maybe next spring. All right. Now, you have several other big FKTs. So the Tuscarora, of course, is a multi-day. The Mid-State Trail, which we all know is that is very treacherous trail and you spent 6 days on that one. So you had some experience coming into this, but can you talk a little bit about what you did to prepare for this? Because yes, you had experience doing unsupported FKTs previously, but this was a hard push because, like I said, it is such a competitive route. It was already a really fast time. So what did you do to get ready?
So my sort of, unfortunately, I live in Philly, so not a ton of vert within 100, like within an hour of me. So essentially what I do for training is I do just during the week, I do just regular runs through the city. I do like a 7.5 mile like maintenance run. And then on the weekends I head out to Valley Forge. And then I can get about 5,400 feet of vert in 26 miles. And so I just do this like 6 mile loop over and over and over. And so I wake up at like 3:34 in the morning. I'll head out there and then I just pop on my headlamp and then start my loop. And then I use my car as like my aid station. So I'll do my like one loop, come back to the car, drink some water, do another loop, drink some maltodextrin.
Wow.
I just do that over and over. Yeah.
That sounds terrible. So once you hit when you hit a multi day in the woods, you're like let free.
Yeah.
you're excited to be loose and free in the woods, I'm sure.
Yeah. And this last trip we did a camping trip with my family at Greenwood Furnace. So I did some training runs up in Roth Rock State Forest, along in the mid-state, brought back good memories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super rocky in that section. So that was good rock twisting ankle training.
For some of our viewers listening, I just want to clarify, your eyes aren't glowing blue. They are a reflection off your computer screen. I just had somebody message me, so I just want to make sure they realize you are human. And it's
not a robot.
Bob, real quick, not to get off subject, but after you finished this FKT and you beat it by 50 minutes, you went to get yourself some food, I believe, at a Wendy's or something. You told me a quick story that was hilarious. Tell us what happened.
Well, so I was like, at that point, I was pretty delirious. I called my wife and I was just like enjoying staring off into the woods because my brain at that point is just trying to sleep. Like, it's kind of wild. And again, this is like part of the whole reason why I enjoy doing this stuff is because you're able to get your brain into places that you would never be able to do in like a normal everyday life.
Yeah.
And so my brain is actively trying to dream while I'm talking to my wife on the phone. She's like, "You're out of it, aren't you?" I was like, "Oh yeah." Oh yeah. And she's like, how are you getting home? And I was like, "Well, I guess I'm going to try to get an Uber. I have a car rental at Hagerstown Airport, which is about 16 miles away. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to get an Uber. I don't know. We'll figure it out." And I just hung up and like walked up to the park. I had ran out of food 14 miles prior. And so food and water. So I was so thirsty, wow. So hungry. And I passed so much trail magic on the trail. And I had to like explain every time, like I'm doing an unsported. And so I get up there and I'm filling my water in a bathroom and a thru hiker comes up to me and he's like, "Hey man," he's like, "there's trail magic over in the pavilion." I was like, "Oh my gosh." I was like, "Thank you." So I like hobbled over and some like absolutely delightful people gave me a ham sandwich and some Doritos. And I'm like sitting in the pavilion and they're like, "Hey, you can come over and talk with us." And I told them what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "I'm having a tough time talking right now." And the other woman's like, "Just let him be. He just went through a lot."
Trail people are the best. Yes. That's great.
So anyway, so miraculously somehow got an Uber, got it to the Hagerstown Airport. I think it's Hagerstown Airport. Checking in to get the car rental was very challenging. And I was like, you know, trying to deal with all that. Mm-hmm. Hopped in the car, drove it directly across the street to a Wendy's. Parked the car, reclined the seat, and immediately passed out within not even 30 seconds. And then I slept in the car for like 3 or 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good place to wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I realized when I was like, should I get food before or after? And I like pulled out my phone and I tried to like figure out the app and it made no sense to me. And I was like, I should definitely just go to sleep right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now what, it was an unsupported run, but what unsupported rules do you follow? Because everybody's a little bit different. Do you carry all of your garbage with you? What are some of the nuances that you follow?
So I carry all my garbage start to finish. I carry everything start to finish. And I initially would not take water from like taps, like public taps. Mm-hmm. But I decided on the Tuscarora, I took water from at Cowan's Gap. I decided that, I mean, in the rules, it explicitly says you are allowed to take water from public taps. And at that point, I was like, I don't need to be this pure. I don't need to just do all natural sources.
Yeah.
So I filled, I think, a couple of places. Maybe, I don't even know if I did. I can't remember, but I'm okay with public taps. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, nothing cached. Don't leave anything behind.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right.
What? What's next?
What's
next that you can talk about?
I mean, I'm happy to talk about anything. If somebody's going to go out there and be faster than me, then good for them. They deserve it. I need to get back on the Benton McKay. I attempted that one earlier this year, made it 180 miles. My ankle swelled up like tremendously. Wow. It didn't really hurt, but it was just like the size of it was concerning. And so just to be safe, I hopped off trail. So I would like to go back and do that one. That trail it's even more rugged than the Mid-State, dare I say. It's like,
wow.
There was just so many blowdowns. It was April, but there's so many blowdowns. It's so remote. I didn't see any people. It doesn't really go through any towns. It doesn't cross any roads. It's a really rugged trail. And the bummer was I was a full day ahead of the unsupported FKT when I bailed. Mm-hmm. So I had it. I hit a bunch of rain the first day. I was going to hit a bunch of rain the next day. And so I just felt like I wasn't going to put my best effort into it. So it was like the ankle and then everything else. So, and then on top of it, I have a little MP3 player that I store all my podcasts on. Mm-hmm. And on the first day, I went into like listen to the Running Mullet, and I'm like, wait, it deleted all of my Running Mullet episodes.
No,
there was none. And I was I can't go on. And so that affected me emotionally as well. So,
wow,
true story.
It affects me emotionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds horrible. You need your Running Mullet.
I was so bummed. I was like, what am I going to do in the middle of the night?
Yeah. You could call up Eric. He'll talk to you.
I'll just talk. Yeah.
He'll tell you stories through the night.
Oh man. I don't think he needs my help. This stuff's crazy to me.
Yeah. It's super inspiring. I love hearing about it. Makes me want to get back out and do something. Oh my gosh. What advice do you have for people trying to tackle something really, I mean, maybe you weren't intimidated by this one, but I feel like the Pennsylvania AT FKT, it's just another beast within the hardness of FKTs. So what advice do you have for people who are attempting a really difficult FKT?
So the first thing is, if it's unsupported, definitely dial in your gear and get everything so it's like efficient and you know where everything is and you really know, like if you're, you know, like I have different color-coded stuff on my bivy so that I know like head end, foot end, and I know everything has a place where it goes. So when I'm sleep deprived and I'm getting super wacky, I don't have to think. I just sort of like, it's all like muscle memory, robotic motions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely important. You definitely cannot train for sleep deprivation. So it's not really worth trying to like abuse yourself and not sleep for a few days to see if it, will improve. It's just some days I'm feeling it, some days I'm not. I always just hope that I'm able to not sleep when I need to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's great advice. I think, I think that there are some, especially shorter trail races where gear gets downplayed, kind of like, oh, whatever kind of shoe you have, you should be able to put up with it. And gear just becomes so much more important. And like you said, dialed in. And I think there's a comfort level that you have to get to with your gear for an unsupported.
Yeah.
And so in my head, I'm still getting myself used to that, where I'm focusing a lot on gear, and I'm questioning, am I too focused on my gear? But it really does become really important, especially in an unsupported and a multi-day, where you're really trying not to carry too much and carry enough and manage all the things. And
yeah, I obsess over gear. It can sort of make or break for me, at least. Everybody is different, but it can make or break an experience. Like if something goes wrong, I need to be able to trust that it's gonna get me there. Although I did, this is kind of crazy. I used a pair of shoes. I used Saucony Exodus Ultras.
Uh-huh.
And I had worn them for a total of 15 miles before I attempted the FKT.
Yeah.
Just because I bought a pair of Saucony running shoes and I absolutely love them. Like the foam in them is incredible. So I do not recommend trying a totally brand. I've never even run in Saucony's ever. They worked out perfectly. I had no blisters, no foot issues. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a plug for Saucony that, they worked out for you.
Yeah. And not for everyone, who knows?
Yeah.
And it will also, again, this is like the weird stuff that you fiddle with. They're too, I got a size too big. There were 14s. I'm a 13 and a half, but they don't make 13 and a halves. So I ended up wearing like a sock liner, a regular sock. And then these shoes were a little big, but it was fantastic because I never smashed my toes into anything because I had like a ton of extra room. So now I'm just going to do that going forward now. So,
yeah.
How tall are you?
6 foot.
Oh man, that's a big shoe.
I mean, my feet are probably swollen after years of slamming them into the ground over and over.
You're true.
I used to wear 12 and a half.
Do you have any races on your schedule? I know you did Eastern States last year.
I don't. I'm just more, I loved Eastern States. It was a super cool experience. I love like seeing everybody and running into the aid stations and having people cheer you on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I really like to just like do stuff on my own schedule. Like I picked this weather window for the AT because it was perfect weather, perfect temperature.
Yeah.
And I could tell like at the Benton McKay Trail, it just didn't, I tried to force it because I booked a flight. And it just didn't work out. And that's a big thing I learned from that trip is for me, I do not force trips to start when I'm not ready or when I'm not feeling comfortable with the weather. Mm-hmm. And Eastern States last summer, it rained like that huge thunderstorm went through I was making incredible time to Heiner Run State Park. And then I got to the top of the Donut Hole Trail and that crazy thunderstorm came through and it just went downhill from there.
Yeah.
So no, nothing really planned.
Nothing wrong with that. You know what you like.
Yep. Yeah.
Not to say I won't do it again, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, Grace, we got to wrap this up.
Okay.
Bob, what are you doing this weekend?
I am actually going to Little Loggers Fest.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we're camping.
Great.
Camping at Kettle Creek for 3 nights. And then my 5-year-old daughter, Caroline, is going to have her first trail run because she keeps seeing me and she's like, I want to do that. So
That's phenomenal to hear. And then the next day, you're going to run your butt off at Sproul 10K, right? That's a hard race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to volunteer, too. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. What are you doing, Eric?
I'm running in Maine. Well, by the time the weekend comes, I'll be traveling back towards you, which sucks.
Yeah, I know.
Closer to you.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that right now because I'm enjoying my week.
That's right. All week you're going to be running in Maine and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. What about you, Grace? What's going on this weekend?
Jason and I are celebrating on Thursday is our anniversary, 14 Grace, years.
Grace, listen, I don't know why I'm whispering, but tomorrow is our anniversary.
Not really?
Not you and me, but Becky and me. Yeah. Becky and I. Yeah.
How many years have you been married to her?
Thank you. I only have one. She's the first one.
Got it. She's the only one so far.
So far.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't reset yet. We're still going strong. We're at 19.
19 years. That's awesome.
What about you, Bob? How long have you been married? I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I know how it is. So just say a number and we'll believe you.
We'll go with it.
We've been together for 15 years. Nice. If you ask her, she wouldn't be able to tell you the number of years either.
I'm so bad at it.
It really isn't.
I always have to double check myself, but I double checked yesterday. 14 years we've been married and then we were together for 5 years before we got married. So we've been together for 19 and we got a little cabin in West Virginia for the weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going to be.
Well, you two lovebirds, enjoy yourselves and happy anniversary. And
thank you. You too.
We will probably, I think at this point, we'll be back next Monday at 7:30, right, Grace?
We sure will. We will be live again on the YouTubes and on the Facebooks every 7:30 Eastern on here, right here on Mondays. Yep. And then we're also on the Spotify's and the iTunes and leave some comments and some likes for all of the algorithm monsters out there. And we'll have another great show next week.
Yeah. Bob, thanks for taking the time to be on. I hope maybe it inspires just one person to go out there and absolutely destroy your time, which is what it's all about, right?
I told you when we crossed paths at Eastern States, I said, you go out there, dangle that carrot for me.
Yep. No, that's what it's all about. And it's what you did is very impressive. And congratulations on reaching the goal of, you know, doing what you went out to do. And who knows how long it'll stay there for, but that's the whole point.
Yeah, and thanks for coming to tell us all about it and share your wisdom and your experience and your stories so that we can all learn from it and keep on crushing.
Yeah, everybody's got to learn to stitch their own best and make their own stuff in order to do this the right way. It's incredible. Thanks, Bob. Keep us informed what's in the future, and because we'd love to hear about the crazy stuff that you attempt and complete. So keep me in the loop.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.